Today is February 8th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
We're podcasting a little earlier than usual this week. As soon as I heard about Steve Jobs' letter to the world, I knew what our fodder would be. There's all kinds of analysis out there this week, but most of it, well, it's bunk. Let's see if the Context Machine can do a little bit better than the mainstream media. I mean, I sure hope so. If not, Jeff, you and I ought to be out of our jobs.
Yeah. Okay, here's the scoop. Apple Inc. CEO Steve Jobs published an open letter on the Apple website on Tuesday that directly attacks a criticism of the DRM scheme used to protect music downloaded from the iTunes store. The lengthy letter breaks down into three main components. What we have is an explanation of the state of things, that is, how we ended up with DRM or digital rights management. It also covers the reason why Apple can't license its FairPlay DRM technology, and then finally includes a bombshell announcement where Apple says it supports selling digital music without DRM.
Now, listeners of this show probably already know a fair amount about the first point, that is, what DRM is and why we have it. We're also taking for granted that you all know that the name of Apple's own DRM technology is FairPlay, and that you know something about at least what it does or what the parameters of that DRM are.
Now, the third point, which is that Apple would support the idea of selling music without any online DRM, that's the reason this letter has everyone up in such a tizzy.
Now, the second point, that is the one, the second point is the one that argues that Apple cannot license FairPlay. That's the one with new information. Presumably, Apple had, or previously, Apple had simply demonstrated that it was not going to license FairPlay, right? It had had FairPlay for a while and hadn't licensed it. In his letter, though, Mr. Jobs reveals that the terms of Apple's contract with the record labels demand that Apple repair any breaches in the FairPlay DRM within a few weeks. That was something that was previously unknown. Now, Mr. Jobs also claims, and this, by the way, is something surprising to me, so our computer science listeners should pipe up if they can confirm or reject this, but Mr. Jobs claims that there is no open source way to implement DRM. That is, any DRM technique requires some built-in secret, a coding strategy that by its very nature is subject to reverse engineering. Now, like I said, that's surprising to me, but I guess he argues that it's true. Again, if anyone knows something to the contrary, or if you want to confirm that for us, email us, roundup@macobserver.com. But if you put those two points together, both that Apple has to repair breaches in FairPlay and that DRM requires some kind of secret that Apple needs to keep proprietary. If both of those arguments are valid, it means it really isn't reasonable for Apple to hand out the keys to FairPlay per the European regulators' wishes. Opening FairPlay apparently would subject it to more frequent hacking, which must be true if they have to build this thing with some kind of secret technology, and that would place an undue burden on Apple, making the iTunes store an unreasonable business to pursue. That is, at least in Europe, where it's being forced to open up FairPlay.
Well, and we're also assuming that the burden placed on Apple would be undue, and we don't really know for sure whether or not that's the case.
True enough. Well, anyway, that's it for the fodder. Let's crank up the machine. So, Jeff, I'm just curious. We haven't talked about this, the two of us, at all offhand at all yet. I'm just curious what your reaction is to this letter.
Well, my first thought when I saw it was, holy crap, where'd this come from? But when I had a minute to sit down and actually absorb what this whole thing was, I thought, wow, these guys at Apple are good. I mean, they... totally know how to play the system. which is why they're in the position that they are now, where we have the iPod and the iTunes Store as the dominant online music and portable listening system.
Now, this sounds really good from the consumer's perspective, right? We've got Apple saying, hey, the expression Steve Jobs uses in this letter is we do it in a heartbeat. It, in this case, would be sell music through iTunes with no digital rights management, with no DRM. We'll throw fair play in the trash if the record labels will let us do it. That's a very appealing argument to, I would think, any consumer of music. What you said is these guys are good, presumably good, like you said, at playing the system. What are some of the systems that they're playing here?
Well, right now, I think Apple is lining everything up so they can play everyone. This could turn into an I can't lose situation for Apple. I mean, they're setting up a foundation for their argument that they'll use in Europe, which is, look, you can't force us to share this copy protection technology with everyone else, because if you do, then you're screwing us and the contracts we have with the record labels.
Well, and this is they're also saying they can also say you're screwing the consumers, because they say,
right,
if you force us to open this, our only choice is to leave the market. Now, that assumes an undue burden, which, like you pointed out, is we don't necessarily know. But they can make that argument. We just have to leave, right? Our deals with the labels are such that we have to leave, and that ends up being a lose situation for consumers. They no longer get to buy music through iTunes.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing that goes along with this is that Apple is, in essence, shooting a warning shot across the bow of all the other companies that want to play in this game. And what they're saying is, look, we know we're big enough and we're strong enough and we have the pull now that we can maintain our lead with the iPod even if it's an open system for everyone else to play with. And that's a pretty big shot to be sending out at companies like Microsoft and Sony.
Now, one of my other questions for you is, why is this happening now? And there are several arguments that we can talk about. One of them you just kind of brought up in passing. Apple leveraged the iPod dominance at the time it released the iTunes Music Store in order to make iTunes the dominant music selling service. If Apple had never designed the iPod and they just said, hey, we're going to start selling you songs through iTunes, it seems hard to believe that anyone would have really latched onto that if they hadn't already kind of grokked the idea of keeping their music library on their computer with iTunes because they had iPods. Is there a timing element here just in terms of the trajectory of the iPods and iTunes market share?
Oh, absolutely. Apple doesn't do something like this by coincidence. This was a very well-calculated move. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And yeah, these are really smart guys, and they really know what they're doing. And the timing, although we don't know all the pieces yet, when everything falls in place and we look back on why Tuesday with this announcement and why Tuesday, February 6th with this announcement, yeah, when we have all the pieces, we're going to sit back and go, that totally makes sense. And man, were they smart. And I really think that the timing, along with whatever else is in store for us over the next few weeks or months, it's going to come together like clockwork, and we're going to sit back and go, damn, they're good.
Let's spend a moment or two and think about some other things that might be related to the timing here. So one issue is the trajectory of iPod and iTunes and the market share, the idea that iTunes doesn't need the iPod. They don't need to necessarily be latched onto one another in order to survive. Another thing that occurred to me is contract negotiations with the record labels. Maybe we're coming up near the end of a contract cycle, and they're in the process of renegotiating their contracts. Is there anything else? I mean, that's one idea, right? Their contracts are running out, and so they're trying to say, hey, let's get rid of DRM now while we're redoing our contracts. Anything else that occurs to you as possible reasons for timing?
Well, that's a possibility. Another thing that could go into the whole timing thing is, does Apple have any plans to file any type of documents with the courts in relation to what's going on in Norway and the whole Scandinavian region? Well, ultimately, pretty much all of Europe by the time this is done. So I'm sure that there's a lot of calculated thought going into the timing for those types of things as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like what you're saying is, if, for example, if they had to submit some filings to courts that are going to reveal bits and pieces of what was in this letter, they said, well, why don't we publish this letter to get the public case out there, and then the court filings will kind of dovetail with the public statement, rather than having people running through the court filings and extracting things in bits and pieces in legal language and trying to turn it into a more coherent argument.
Right. And actually, Apple is really good at doing this. They'll take the information, they'll massage it and present it to you in the way they want you to see it. And that's, I know that some people look at that and go, you know, that's just not cool. Let us have it all, and then we'll figure out what we want to do with it. But when you look at it from Apple's standpoint, or really any other company, what they want to do is present their information in the best possible light. And a perfect example of this is the iPhone. Why did Apple announce it 6 months early? Well, because they wanted to get the information out in the way they wanted us to have it, and not in little bits and pieces as it leaked out from filings with the government and licensing approvals and things like that. And they're doing the exact same thing here. They're giving us the information the way they want us to have it. And that's a pretty common thing to do. It just so happens that Apple and all the little masterminds behind the scenes at Apple are really good at doing this.
There's another thing that I want to talk about. The next thing we were going to talk about, and we'll get to this in just a second, are some mainstream media reactions and some mainstream press and analysts and so forth. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about how other people are spinning this. I've read a lot of stories around the web that have comments from people. For example, the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA, which some people may remember that acronym from back in the Napster battles when the RIAA was suing everybody in sight.
Did they finally stop?
They've slowed down, or at least they've stopped getting so much negative press from it.
They're taking a breather.
Right. Their comment, and Jeff, maybe if you have some other ones that you've seen in passing, we can mention these to people so they can go and find out more about them. But I wanted to point out this one. This one's kind of funny. They extracted the one thing that Apple said, no, this is not something we're willing to do. And they said, oh, it's so nice that Apple is willing to do that. What they said is, it's essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, it's so nice that Apple has offered to license Fairplay. We think that's a great idea. Which, of course, is exactly what they said they weren't willing to do. So that was one of the clumsiest spins I've seen of this. There were one or two others. Is there anything else that you've seen of people in the industry reacting to this that has been interesting to you?
Well, I've seen several editorials come out where people are going on and on about how Apple is trying to obfuscate the whole deal, and that their intention is to take over the market completely, or, you know, I don't know, make space baby aliens. I don't know. There's a lot of conspiracy theory type stories that are going on right now. And I look at them and I think, you know, you need to read the whole thing, and you need to look at the backstory before you start making a lot of these comments. Although, one of my favorite responses so far to Apple's letter came from Microsoft. And one of the people that's involved in the Zune project said that Apple is being irresponsible, and that while Apple is running around saying, kill DRM, kill DRM. The responsible companies like Microsoft are actually down in the trenches dealing with the record labels to work out the real issues. And I think from Microsoft's perspective, the real issue is that there is, although a slim chance, there is still a chance that Apple might be able to start selling songs without DRM. And that's the worst thing that could possibly happen to Microsoft, because then there would be nothing that would tie anyone into their Zune player, because Zune is set up like the iPod, where it has its own music service, and the music that you buy from that service is tied to the Zune device. They don't want to see an open system. They really need to keep a closed system so that they can mimic what Apple has been doing with FairPlay, the iTunes Store, and the iPod all along.
While you were talking, I was looking around to try and find some of these quotes that I had seen before. Here's another one. Rob Glazer of Real Networks, which owns the Rhapsody service. Rob Glazer is a former Microsoft executive who started Real Networks. He said the idea of selling music without any copy protection was, and this is a quote from the New York Times, an idea in ascendance whose time has come. So he is fully behind this. And he was the driving force at Real Networks, getting Real Networks to hack FairPlay specifically for the purpose of allowing people to buy stuff from Rhapsody and use it on their iPods, which was an interesting issue when it happened.
Yes.
The one other thing that I wanted to point out, and I've forgotten, I apologize who said this, but there was a quote from some industry insider, and it may have been at Microsoft, but I don't recall, who was offended at the notion that Steve Jobs had essentially tried to claim that Apple was the one that was going to try and claim responsibility for this. It was saying, look, this is something that's happening anyway. The record labels are realizing that they want to sell songs without DRM, and Apple is jumping in front of this and trying to take credit for making it happen. It's an interesting argument, and there may be some truth to it, I think. And Jeff, I'm curious, holler if you disagree with this. I think there are ways to look at it that make sense. I mean, there was this news that we carried a couple weeks ago about how record labels were looking at it seriously at a conference in France. They were talking, at least, about selling songs without DRM. But there's no real evidence. If you look at the comments historically of label executives, that they have any interest in selling stuff without DRM. So I found that one a little bit hard to swallow. Although it wouldn't surprise me that if Apple thought this was going to happen, they'd try and jump out in front of it and make it look like it was their idea.
Sure. And if there was one company that could be a catalyst right now to take the record labels from sitting on the fence and saying, oh, should we do this, and pushing them on into, yeah, let's go ahead and make it happen. Right now, that company is Apple. Now, whether or not they're actually doing that, or if they're just putting their spin on everything and trying to make it look like they're doing that, well, you know, time will tell.
All right, here's the quote from the RIAA. I found that as well. They call Apple's offer to license FairPlay, which of course Apple didn't make, quote, a welcome breakthrough and would be a real victory for fans, artists, and labels. There have been many services seeking a license to the Apple DRM. This would enable the interoperability that we have been urging for a very long time. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about some mainstream reactions to all of this. Some quotes, most of these I pulled from articles that we are running this week. Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster said, by doing all of this, by releasing this statement, Jobs absolves Apple of the criticism of a closed system and redirects it toward the music labels. The Wall Street analyst Gene Munster, we talk about occasionally on the show, I'd say that's true, wouldn't you?
Oh, sure. And to me, that totally makes sense that Apple would do that. and not just from a PR standpoint where they can look to us consumers and say, dude, sorry, our hands are tied. This is a really good setup for if they end up in court over in Europe. They're laying the foundation for a legal battle, as well as setting everything up so that they can do their best to make sure that they look good in the public's eye.
All right. Here's another thing that, again, this is Gene Munster said. Consumers choose a device first and a music service second. Apple is confident, justifiably, given the iPod's leading market share, that increasing usage of online music services based on an open platform will sell more devices, and more of those devices will be iPods. What do you think about that?
I think he's right on that one again, too. And here's my reason. If you have the opportunity to go and buy any music player you want and then use it with any service you want, ultimately, even if you buy music from multiple services, you're going to want the good player. If you look at it like cars, you can go buy any car you want and then take it to any gas station you want to put gas in the car. But the bottom line is, as long as you have the money to do it, you're going to buy the car you really want. And in this case, that car is probably going to be an iPod. Okay, that sounded weird, didn't it?
Well, but that's one argument, right, that people will say, oh, well, now I can buy my music from anywhere. I can buy it from Apple. I can buy it from Amazon. I can buy it from Walmart. And it'll play on my iPod if I download it from any of those services. All of those companies have, in addition, like Target or Walmart, Amazon, those folks have download services as well,
right,
as physical services. But there's also the reverse argument, and to me, in many ways, that seems much more powerful. My reaction to Gene Munster's comment is maybe that's true. Other people will say, hey, look, I can now buy stuff elsewhere. But iTunes is pretty much widely regarded as the easiest service to use as well.
Yes.
So it seems that the point is that Apple, in my evaluation of this, it's not so much a statement of Apple wants to get rid of DRMs so that it can make more money based on people trying to, you know, buy stuff elsewhere and come here. It's Apple is confident that both iTunes and the iPod are best of breed products, best of breed services. And so they don't need them coupled. They'll just say, you know what? We'll make both services great. We'll make both of them fantastic. They'll both turn a profit. And we don't need to tie one to the other because they're both awesome. Bring it.
Sure. And if Apple can break the two apart so that they can be independent products, yes, Apple will lose customers. But they're not going to lose enough customers for it to be an issue. And that's because you're going to see a lot of people that previously have been buying other players switch over to the iPod because now they can use it with all the other services they like. And you're going to see some people with iPods that say, okay, I want to go buy music at these other stores now. Fine, that's okay. It's ultimately going to balance itself out, I think.
Now, I would claim that the big win here is going to be digital downloading in general. If there were no DRM, people would flock to digital download services.
I think so, yes. And the big winner in that sub-market will most likely be Apple. And for the reason you said, they have the best-in-class products. And even though for a lot of people, a lesser quality product is good enough, and that's fine for them, there's a substantial part of the market that has taken on the philosophy of, I don't want good enough, I want the best.
And all right, let's take a look at one other comment. Fortune magazine's Brent Schlender said the following in an editorial that we pointed to earlier this week. From the get-go, once it goes on sale this summer, the iPhone where did the iPhone come from? The iPhone, as it is currently described, will be prevented from directly downloading music or video itself, even though it is a wireless broadband-capable device. So Mr. Schlender is saying, hey, look, the iPhone cannot download stuff from iTunes. So the real question, he writes, may be this. Could Jobs' eloquent plea on behalf of consumers all be a gambit to force Apple's content suppliers to renegotiate their deals and make it possible to download music and video directly onto the iPhone? Jeff, I'm taking this one. This sounds okay to me like a conspiracy theory. Now, we know that you won't, or we've been led to believe that you won't be able to use an iPhone to purchase music from iTunes on the day it ships. But we're aware, as far as I know, of no evidence that there are any contractual barriers to doing it, except perhaps with Singular, and that's a totally different business and a totally different set of issues.
True. You're absolutely right.
I love it when I'm right.
Oh, so do I. It makes things so much easier for all of us.
All right, let's take a look at one more. Why don't you take this one? This was an article that you just published as we were recording this earlier today.
Yes. And I have to apologize up front because I'm not sure how to pronounce Mr. Waterhouse's first name. I believe it's Torger. And if I've got it wrong, someone will correct me, I'm sure. Anyhow, Mr. Waterhouse, which is easy to pronounce, he's the senior advisor from the Norwegian Consumer Council, which is the government agency that presented the original complaint to Norway's consumer ombudsman about the whole iTunes licensing issue. So, all right, so now we know who the guy is. Here's what he said. We're happy to see Steve Jobs take on the responsibility that follows from Apple's role as one of the leading companies in the digital sphere and comment on the complaint issue by the Norwegian Consumer Council. And then he goes on to say that Apple and iTunes Music Store should be addressing the issue of record companies and DRM themselves if it needs to be addressed. And as we've stated earlier, it's iTunes Music Store that needs providing a service to the consumer and therefore has a responsibility to offer up a consumer-friendly product. So to distill it down, what Mr. Waterhouse is saying is, cool, Apple is open and receptive. We really like that. However, we still contend that it's Apple's responsibility to deal with the licensing issue, and it's not necessarily fully on the shoulders of the recording industry.
So he's saying Apple is the one that ultimately provides the service to customers, so Apple has to figure out how to fix this. If they fix it by changing their deals with the record labels, that's great, but otherwise they have to open up Fairplay. That seems like the gist there.
That's the gist there. And he's also really happy that Apple did say they'd like to just drop all digital rights management. And his perspective is that would be great. Norway wants to see that very same thing happen. Now, if that were to happen, that also means that Norway would turn around and look at Sony and say, dude, now you have to do it too. And when Microsoft brings the Zune over to Europe, they're going to say, you want to come into our country? You have to play by these rules, and you have to ditch your digital rights management as well. So
all right,
it could be a very big thing.
Yeah, well, it will be. It will be very interesting to see what happens. And if nothing else, this letter does seem to be, at least to some degree, an acknowledgement that Apple is worried that it might have to put up or shut up in Europe.
Yes, it is. So this is part of the groundwork that Apple needs to lay out to be prepared for their worst case scenario. And they're acting like Boy Scouts. Always be prepared.
Now, that is the legal half of it. And there's one other issue that I wanted to bring up in my observation of Apple. The single biggest thing, other than surviving, the single most critical thing to the management at Apple, as far as I can tell, is protecting its brand.
Absolutely.
And most companies don't operate like that, right? Most companies are more focused on staying profitable. That doesn't seem to be an issue with Apple particularly. Apple seems primarily focused on protecting its brand. And here's my reading of it. To summarize everything we've been talking about before, there's the legal half of it that you've been talking about, and then the Apple half of it, the part of this that is quintessentially Apple. As far as I can tell, Apple has decided this is what consumers want. Steve Jobs even says that in the letter. He says this is undeniably, selling songs without DRM, undeniably the best solution for consumers. It seems pretty clear that consumers would agree with that. But they went and did something that most companies in the $10 billion revenue club and above, Apple's actually, I think, above $20 billion now, something that very few of those firms would do. They said, you know what? We want to be seen as being on the right side of that argument. And so we're going to actually put ourselves on record saying, this is what we want to have. We want to have no DRM. That seems like an astonishing step to me for a company that last year sold 15 million iPods or last quarter sold whatever it was, 17 million iPods and has made earned more than $20 billion in the last year.
Yeah, that's a pretty big thing. Now, when I look at that, what I see is a company that thinks different about about their products and where the money is coming from. Most companies that I watch, what they're doing is looking to the next quarter to see what their profit margins are going to be, how much revenue they're going to bring in, what is that going to be to the bottom line. So they're going quarter by quarter, even though they are projecting things out years in advance. What Apple, I think, does, they start by saying, if we do this today, what is this going to be for us 5 years from now? And they're working for the long-term goals all the time. So even though they have a system that they might have to open up today, they've already planned for what that's going to be 5 years from now. And that's part of what all of this is. So, yeah, they're confident they're going to make money, and they know that even if they take a small hit now, they're going to be making money 5 years down the road.
And that is going to have to be the final word.
Okay.
Now, we don't have any time for a product roundup this week. I just want to say very briefly, by way of not doing the product roundup, There's an interesting application I've been looking at recently, and I know we have some regular listeners out there who do kind of editing and scoring for TV, for ads, for other video applications, for video businesses of various kinds. If you do, if you're in that business, take a look at a product called MusicBed DV. It's a product from Sync Audio, and it's designed to help you score video. It has a really clever interface. It's based on adjusting the mood of music and then easily timing it up with video and basing whether it's punchy or whether it's very mellow or whether it's intense or whether it's happy and it has this very clever interface for putting that stuff together, all with prepackaged audio, so you don't actually need to know anything about music creation to do it, and it does sound actually quite cool. So it's not for music creation, which is what I do, and it's why I was looking at it originally. But people that do scoring out there, if you do scoring particularly, I would think for TV in various applications might find it really helpful. So go ahead and check that out. MusicBed DV from Sync Audio.
Okay, and that's the news. Thanks for listening to...
That would be the tail end of Jeff's cold, ladies and gentlemen. You may have noticed that Jeff sounded kind of funky last week. That's because he had a thing in his throat.
Can you believe it? I made it all the way through the podcast right to then. And for those of you playing at home, we typically sit down and start and go from beginning to end without editing the podcast. And okay, so let's try that again.
Hit it.
And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
Oh, I'm dying. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. And that is all I've got.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone. We'll see you online. Thanks for listening.